You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
Oh, I hope everybody's just hanging. It is Thursday night. It is Thursday night, and it's the Thursday night, quite frankly. And quite frankly, I've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, I've got links, but I don't give a shit about any of them. Oh my God, I don't give a fuck about any of them. Any of them. I am in such a mood right now. I am in one hell of a mood. Let's see what comes out, shall we? Let's start with ABC News, ABC 7 here in New York. They did a little something on that, the Adam Saleh kid. The prankster, the ethnic antagonizer. That was doing his thing on a plane again, and it just, I don't know what happened. You know, after all, after years of pranking people and trying to elicit bad reactions out of people, and then, of course, labeling them bigots and trying to make some kind of phony social commentary, just, what do you know? He got kicked off a plane. How did it happen? And of course, everybody's like, what kind of a world is this? He was speaking a foreign language. He shouldn't have to deal with this. He was talking to his mother. Oh. All the idiots. Well, he was talking to his mother. I was like, okay. And the best thing is, okay, we only got one side of the story. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I've got some suspicions as to what this is. Listen to some of the testimonials from the people that got off the plane that shared the plane with him. Ready? We're just going to play the ABC thing a little bit. Hold on a second. Let me screen capture this better. All right. On to what's going on.
Jim Dolan live at JFK with the story. Jim.
Bill Adam Saleh is an internet star. He's big on Twitter and YouTube with pranks he videotapes, some of them on airplanes.
But the star.
He claims what happened today was not a prank. Still, no. His version of what happened.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And what is that? What is that? He's like the boy that cried bigotry. The boy that cried bigotry, Adam Saleh. There you go.
Happened and why he got kicked off that flight and the version of some passengers are vastly different.
Mm.
If the embrace wasn't staged for the camera,
hug me, people see me.
I mean, it was at very
look at that.
Thank you guys.
Look at this. Watch this. Everybody that's watching, just look real closely. He's the one with his hand over his head. He's so emotionally distraught, and his buddies, his cohorts are with him, helping him out.
But different.
Look at him.
How did this happen?
My life's work.
It was at very least convenient.
Thank you, guys.
Adam Saleh, internet prankster and mischief maker, found himself today, deliberately or not, in the middle of a controversy that some thought was wholly contrived by him for his 250,000 internet followers.
Look, this guy's a prankster. He's all over. He does this for a living.
We're getting kicked out.
Saleh was boarding a flight from London to New York today when, he says, he and his friend were speaking Arabic. He says some passengers were frightened by that and demanded he be removed from the plane. That is not the story other passengers tell.
He stood up and started shouting, putting his fist in the air, shouting something that sounded remotely Arabic. For no reason, sat down. few minutes passed, and then he was up again, doing it again. He did it three times, till eventually people said, no, no, we're not happy with this.
People were crying. They felt so uncomfortable, because it felt awkward. It was really uncomfortable. There wasn't fear. It was just uncomfort. It's like, why is this happening in today's world?
I cannot believe my eyes.
Delta interviewed
Oh, you can believe your eyes, you stupid piece of shit. You had your phone ready and everything. You are an antagonist. You're a piece of shit. Known it for. Listen. We are waiting for this. I was waiting for the other side. We talked about it yesterday. There's their story, and then what happened. We had his story first, of course, because it had to lead. It had to lead. He had to go out there, and this was all part of the plan. Talk to mommy on the runway. Get the fuck out of here. Everybody makes their last calls in the goddamn lobby. Get out of here. When they're going to order a stale bagel before they get on the plane, that's when they make their calls and they send their text messages. Get the hell out of here. I was talking to my mother. Get the fuck out of here. Let's keep listening if there's anything else even to really listen to.
Several passengers later released this statement. It appears the customers who were removed from the flight sought to disrupt the cabin with provocative behavior. This type of conduct is not welcome.
This was not a prank. No prank at all.
Maybe, but for all his sudden anger, even he acknowledges he was laughing at the time.
While we're in there and getting accused and people telling us, oh, they need to leave right now, me and him felt like we were terrorists. We're looking at each other laughing.
You're looking at each other laughing because it worked. Because it worked. You've been trying to get people nervous around Arabs since the inception of your YouTube. And it worked. This time you got kicked off a plane. And maybe, just like the kid that throws the egg at the car, and as soon as the egg leaves its hand, says, oh, I shouldn't have thrown that. And then it's all nervous and it's defensive. And what's the stance? What's the story? What's the alibi? What's the emotion that we're putting forward? Of course, you know, first you're laughing. Oh, my God, I think we're terrorists. Then you're crying and everybody's like, huddle around me, bro. Huddle around me, bro. I'm really upset right now. Get the fuck out of here. Done with it. Too much going on. Let's go to the college campuses. So we go. These are the people that are probably believing the story the most. Here's Muslim students. Muslim students. This is from campusreform.org. There's always a lot of stuff to laugh at there. Campusreform.org. Muslim students demand prayer rooms in every major building. Major building. Remember this, and the people that are lobbying for this and saying, yes, it's right, they want the Ten Commandments taken down and everywhere on site. Okay, they want crucifixes taken down. They want Ten Commandments banished from all over the place, courtrooms and campuses. They want all the speech checked. They want all of the religion washed away and acid washed away from any kind of public site. But, oh, man, we need a prayer room for Muslims in every major building on college campuses. More specifically, University of Maryland. So university students at Maryland have released a list of 64 demands. 64 demands. Remember, Michelle Obama, these are the kids that looked up to all the adults to see what they want, how to react to things, how to get things done, and what they think is really need, who's entitled to what, and how you go about getting it. This is it. You make a list of demands. List of demands, like Martin Luther. Marginalized, okay, they want to, in their effort to make campus more amenable to, listen to this, marginalized, this is all in quote, marginalized, comma, American Indian, that's the new one. Nobody gave a shit. That wasn't included in anything until Standing Rock. Wasn't included in anything. Now it was like, you know, we should really start lobbying for the Indian, the American. And of course, a marginalized, comma, American Indian, comma, black, comma, Latinx? Latinx? Latinx, I guess that's the O and the A. I get that's just for all of them. Latino, Latina. Just wanted to put an X in there. Oh, Latino, Latina. They're avoiding gender. Oh my God! What's happening? I can't believe. I know I shouldn't be surprised, but it's the first time I saw this. I don't know. It's so Latinx, LGBTQIA+, because if we forgot any imaginary bullshit, just pretend it's there. That's what the plus is for, because I'm sure they're going to add on a couple other letters. Then they'll start making up letters. The alphabet will make new letters. There's no long. I bet you any money in about 5 years, there will be a 27th letter, and it'll have something to do with gender. Mark my words. Give us five years, and there's going to be a 27th letter, and it'll have something to do with being sensitive about gender. Comma. We're not done yet. Muslim, comma, pro-Palestine, comma, and undocumented students. Undocumented, like, you know, secret agent students. The students that don't exist. They don't have papers. They're just there, but they're not there. Remember, these are the people that are in the shadows. They're in the shadows, attending major universities in the shadows. Remember that. Muslim students, for instance, want, quote, one room in each major building designed for prayer. Go outside and find a fucking tree to camp out underneath, okay? Go outside, find a fucking tree. How about that? And shuttle services to the local mosque for Muslim students to have access to a place of worship. Call a cab, okay? Okay, we can't even wish, we get frowned upon to wish each other Merry Christmas, and we got to pay for your shuttle to go to a fucking mosque? Get the fuck out of here. Had enough of this shit. Students at the University of Maryland, crazy students at the University of Maryland, have released a list of 64 demands in their effort to make the campus more amenable to marginalized student populations. I'm just so proud of our kids. Look at how amazing they are. All they do is think about nothing but gender and people's skin color, and they're just obsessed with it. Good for them. The project known as Protect UMD is a collaborative effort between 25 crazy student organizations at the University of Maryland, including Students for Justice in Palestine, Bisexuals at Maryland, and the Black Student Union. Can't forget them. There are 64 demands across 8 subsets of students. We already did this. Including scholarships for students of marginalized communities. So more affirmative action for people that don't deserve it. And a ban on Columbus Day and the beginning of every on-campus event with an acknowledgement that the, quote, this is indigenous land. And that also African-American professors get tenure just because they're African-American, not because they're good teachers or that their students are actually learning anything worth a fuck. He's so hateful. I saw his podcast one night. So hateful. That preferred pronouns are included on rosters. And that queer diversity training is required. You know what? Have the University of Maryland. This is why we have a free market. We know where the crazies are. We know where the people with absolutely no integrity are. We know where the tyrants are. And we simply don't go there anymore. Simply don't go there anymore. You want to make fun. I remember kids, there used to be a little bit of a stigma about anybody. Now, very rarely up here do you find somebody that was homeschooled. You know, that's more, you find that a lot more in rural areas and stuff like that. Not very much so up here in the Northeast. But there used to be a real big, like, stigma about that. Like, homeschool, that's kind of weird. You know what's weird? This. good. I'm happy for the homeschooled kids that got to avoid this shit. Holy shit. The beginning of every on-campus event with an acknowledgement that this is indigenous land. Whose indigenous land? Because you know that even the Native Americans that you've put up on top of the altar of your own religion. Now that you've picked up the Native Americans and you've put them onto the altar, you know that even they were not the original inhabitants of this land, right? You know that, right? You know they came from Asia, right? So what are we talking about here? How far do you want to go back with this subjective bullshit of yours? How far do you want to go back? You let me know. Let me know. We're sitting around waiting. So they want to have queer diversity training. You remember when calling somebody a queer used to be a bad thing? Yeah. Let me see here. Muslim students also want one room in each. We did that. Among the pro-Palestine demands, they want Jews killed. Among the pro-Palestine Palestine demands, students want the administration to condemn the, quote, conflation of pro-Palestinian activism with anti-Semitism. Okay. Now, listen, I know that there are, you want to talk about indigenous land and all that stuff and how far back do you go to figure out whose land was whose. I understand that. But you have to play that same game with the Palestinians and the Israelis as well. There is more than enough historical evidence of the Jews inhabiting Israel thousands of years ago. Okay? I understand there was changes of hands here. I understand what happened during the Crusades. I understand what was going on after the World Wars and what was just arbitrarily made into a country, into a state. I understand all that stuff. But still, it's the same kind of, you're talking about conflation, it's the same type of issue that we're talking about with the Native Americans. How far back are you going? How far back are you going? And why are you going back that far? Who stands to benefit? What is the narrative? Who really stands to benefit? It's not all the kids on college campuses who are going to leave college in a couple of years, face a very large, unforgiving business world, and know that they are not equipped for any of the demands of the real world. It's bad enough that that's the case. That many of these kids, 75% of kids, I think, as of just a couple of years ago, leave college and don't even end up working in the fields that they studied for. But you're going to, as all this campus nonsense, this social justice nonsense, keeps growing and growing and growing and inflating on campuses, all we're really going to be doing is dumping even more psychologically damaged, unprepared kids into the real world where they're not going to be able to take constructive criticism because they're going to think, do you understand that taking criticism and critiques and being able to improve upon yourself so that you can either create a better company, a better product, if you're actually going into business for yourself, or to be able to fulfill the position that you are employed, that for which you've been employed at somebody else's company. You need criticism. You need to be able to understand you're not perfect, and you have a lot to improve on and a lot to learn, and that what people critique you, and when people want to show you what you're doing wrong, it's not because of the color of your skin, your religion, the way you dress, your gender, your perceived gender, all of that shit. It's not because of that. But we're so fragile, they have no fucking clue what's coming for them. They think that the college years are going to go on forever. They're going to get some kind of a job at Black Lives Matter Incorporated, and that's going to be them. Unbelievable. They're in for a rude awakening. Rude awakening. Demand number 53 calls for the university to actively encourage students to learn about the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. The pro-Palestine demands are incompatible with the beliefs of the Jewish students' organization on campus. Leading the student groups Terps for Israel, the Jewish Student Union, and the J Street U to abstain from the project. Students for Justice in Palestine declined to answer questions from they're all oh man. They're all big fans of Hamas and Hezbollah, and they're all big fans of it. Big fans. Actually, hold on a second. Hold on. Oh.
When you're laughing, you bring on the joy.
Bring on the joy. Be happy.
You got a groove, my boy.
When you're smiling,
and the world will smile to you. Because I'm the sheik.
Here's I want to show you something that's it was a David Horowitz clip. This is too long. I'll have to grab this for the next show. Just going wherever the hell this is. Hey, you know what? Let's stay on this for a second. I have something. I have a question. I was watching this news flow in across my dash on Tumblr and a few other places, and I saw this. Paris terrorist arrested 1 year after the attack, living in a refugee center. Look at this smiling child. Look at the child. Look at the refugee child. Think about the children. There he is. There's the child. Paris terrorists arrested 1 year after attack. This Tuesday, Redouane, whatever it is, S, was arrested in Lower Saxony. He was an accomplice to Aboud, the mastermind. There you go. Took calling them masterminds again. The mastermind behind the Paris massacre, as well as the Belgian terror cell, which engaged in a lethal shootout with anti-terrorism units. Redouane, whatever his name is, fled from Greece to Germany through refugee streams along Serbia, Hungary, and Austria. He was arrested in an asylum center near Hamburg. He kept his contact with ISIS and was awaiting new orders. He likely radicalized a number of refugees. And, of course, there are sources to that as well. But there you go. There you go. Fled from Greece to Germany through refugee streams. So it's just people, just women and children. Women and three-year-old children that are just, you know, just need to get to where they're going. To inject their culture into Western Europe that needed to be enlightened about what the rest of the civilized world is like. Raid on Austrian. Here's a second headline attached to that. Raid on Austrian refugee center finds serious terrorist plot, drugs, and large amounts of money. A Moroccan asylum seeker has been arrested in Austria, suspected of planning a serious attack in Salzburg between Christmas and New Year's. The quote refugee end quote. Had his asylum application denied, but was not deported. Why, you might ask? Notable is that the raid in the refugee center also saw six other refugees arrested for drug offenses. Besides drugs, there were also large amounts of money found, to the tune of £7,000. Let me see here. Clearly, if they did not have employment, this money was amassed through crime. So now, you could say, well, listen, people who don't have money and don't, you know, they're not employed, they turn to things like selling drugs to keep them alive. Can you really blame them for making the choice between selling some drugs and starving to death? Now, that might be valid in this case, as it is with many cases. But here's the real question, and someone else asked it, and I think that it's the right thing, and our buddy Lucas from the Current Year Report podcast, he chimed in. It was asked, why is there a Moroccan refugee? Morocco isn't at war with anyone. Lucas says, now you're asking the real questions. What is going on? Why is anybody... Why is everybody a refugee, I should ask, if you're coming from Africa, North Africa, or the Middle East? You know, it's not like life in those countries are very good overall. Not all of them are war-torn. Many of them are very oppressive, terrible places with horrific ratings on the human rights scale, even though many of them sit on the Human Rights Council in the UN, which is just irony and just a sad joke. But, you know, here we are again, Moroccan refugee. What the fuck are we talking about? A Moroccan asylum seeker? For what? My God, what is happening in the world? So, and as Gadget Doc did the exchange rate in the chat room, 7,000 pounds is about 8,600 US dollars. So it's just, when are you going to do it? When are you going to get, when is everybody going to say, all right, it's enough? Sorry. Sorry, I was open and I was compassionate for as long as I could. But see, now the idiots in the US. Now we already have plenty of people we don't know who they are in this country already. Now people are always going to get in, but as far as the flooding from the southern border goes, there is absolutely no way to know what the hell's going on. So we may have, and I hate to say it, but we may have to face that day when the trucks start rolling down parade strips and taking people out because, I don't know, somebody is in the truck driving it, right? We may have those days coming. We've already had quite a few attacks here in recent years that have, of course, been labeled workplace violence and acts of domestic terrorism and just, you know, tragic acts of gun violence and all that stuff. Yeah, they've been reworded, they've been repackaged, and they've been remarketed and thrown out there for all of the card-carrying fellow travelers on the left to bend over, and explain it all away to make themselves look like the morally superior asshole dolts that they are. But aside from the fact that we're going to have to take a very real danger in the future into consideration and call a spade when it actually happens, we're just going to have to learn to do it. Because there is a new administration in, and because all the state legislatures have gone so far away from what the last administration was trying to push onto us, and because the governorships and everybody in general is starting to say, you know what, we don't want this. We don't want this. We want to still have a country where we can debate our own social issues and be progressive in very responsible ways and continue to progress, be progressive, progress. Okay? Not in some weird Marxist way. But because it seems like we might have dodged a bigger bullet than the one that we have to still deal with, which is all of the incoming refugees over the next 4 to 8 years alone will probably be stopped in some way. And hopefully the southern border is starting to get a hold of. And hopefully all of the criminal illegal aliens in this country committing crimes like those in Europe who are, you know, being caught with drugs, caught with amounts of cash, caught with, you know, communicating with undesirable people, planning things, migrating illegally, not having documents on them. You know, all of these things that are very, very dubious actions, very, 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 very skeptical about these people. You gotta be. And look what's happening over there when you, this catch and release shit. You can't throw them out. Throw them out. It comes down to what we were talking about before with what is the real way of curbing illegal immigration? Well, destroy the welfare state. Stop the taxation, which is being used inefficiently by government bureaucrats, party politics at work, to go and feed and clothe and indoctrinate and educate and house people that should not be in the country. They're here illegally. but they're being fed more than just food. They're being fed an ideology, and they're being taught who to like, who to hate, and that is all our money being used to teach people that they should look at us, the ones subsidizing their free ride over here. They're being taught to look at us in bad ways. We're bad people. Well, you know what? You cut off the welfare state, and people don't want to come here. They don't want to come here. Only the ones who really want to be part of the country that we have and the values that we have, the principles that we have. And it has nothing to do with race. Absolutely not. We've talked about it on the show ad nauseum. I don't want to get into it again. But it's the same exact fucking thing. Same exact thing. I have no clue what to do anymore. I don't know what to do anymore, everybody. Let me thank everybody who subscribes and has funded this show and has become my boss. I have two new bosses. I have to thank so much. Okay, I'm going to start with them. So patreon.com/quitefrankly. There's lots of great stuff up there. I'm not in the mood to tell you what's up there. You can check it out. I hope you check it out. Some nights we have nights like this where I don't even want to do the full hour. And I will not do more than an hour tonight. I'm just not feeling it. But I want to thank Stephanie Evil from Gaslight.tv, one of our writers on the Gaslight staff, and also a frequent viewer and a friend and a contributor, not only in a writing sense, but also in a journalistic sense, but also in a conversational sense, and calling in and just being part of the thing that we're trying to build here. And I also want to thank our buddy Cos, John Cosentino, long, long-time friend of ours since high school. He has jumped on and thrown his hat into the ring with us, and I get to write him a letter every month now, too. That's going to be great. I can't wait. Both 1776 members. There might be only like one or two spots left on that, so it's almost sold out. And then I'm going to have to think of another perk to put up there. That is just as appealing as the letter writing, because I think I'm almost at my max. So if you ever wanted to be a pen pal with me, you only have a couple of more chances, unless somebody drops out. And then, of course, I'll let you know that we have an opening. But Stephanie Evil and Cos, thank you guys so much. Bren Antilles, thank you, my man. Marianne Hart, Gadget Doc, Kate McCallum, Jenny Lee, Matt DeFabio, who's not here, Brad Meyer, Rudy Escarcega, Jackie Milam, Eric Reitz, Whitney McShann, Pierre, my friend, thank you for chilling. I don't know how the hell you're going to make a thumbnail tonight, man. I don't even know what the hell we're talking about here. LS Dan, Rob Corrado, Max Ancaparato from Colorado, Christian Peppas, Sean Collins, Matt Smith, Michael Wells, Nikki Solis, Andrew Dame, Laura Varis, Perry and Stacy Little, the Littles, and Mike May. Also, Stephanie K. Beauty. Check out StephanieKBeauty.com or check out Stephanie K. Beauty on Instagram and leave her a comment and say, hey, I saw you on Quite Frankly. I love all those plugs. You know? So that is all of my plugs for the night. Thank you. It's a healthy list of support. Thank you, guys. No matter what you pledged, a dollar. We have people who pledged a dollar, people who pledged 10, to all the way up to $19.99, which is Nikki. Nikki has pledged the most out of all of them. So there you go. Oh, wait a second. Wait a second. No, no, no. Tony's in the room. I have to add him to this list. And also, my good, good buddy, Tony Federici. I just wrote Tony his first letter, too. Tony was part of that, so now he's on the list. This is a long-ass list now. This is fantastic. I'm going to have to type and print all these out so I don't have to rely on my handwriting anymore. So, what's to say? 7:35, 25 minutes left until this all starts all over again. Good tidings to everybody, Hoss says. Hoss Perot. Let's see here. Robot babies. Let's go to something that's not political. Let's go to something that's not Muslim. I just don't want to think about it anymore. I don't want to think about it anymore. I'll tell you something. For all my Muslim friends out there, and anybody who's actually given this show a chance enough and has come to the realization and the knowing that I am not Islamophobic. I am not at all. But you have to understand who has used once again, what does progressivism do? You know what? Fuck this. What does progressivism do? I just got a book given to me, an early Christmas present, that I was actually really interested in reading. And it's written by a pretty polarizing character, Glenn Beck. Okay, and I don't know if anybody actually saw what Glenn Beck did with Samantha Bee recently. I kind of rolled my eyes, but it wasn't bad. It really wasn't bad. I mean, I was just watching these two. Maybe there's a way, because I'll tell you something. Glenn Beck has the Constitution, and he has principles in line. As far as him with the Never Trump stuff and all this other, you know, whatever he's going to do, that it's just what the man does, and to each their own. What the fuck ever. Nobody's going to do everything that's agreeable with you. But he wrote a book. It's his latest book. It's called Liars: How Progressives Exploit Our Fears for Power and Control. The opening, it's 10 pages long, but it is really, really telling. And I was just about to talk about what, and it's probably in the book because I haven't even started. I just started chapter one. I read the prologue last night, okay? It was given to me last night. And so I'm sure that as far as the Islamophobia stuff and what's going on out there with that whole narrative, that has to be in the book too. Even though Islam does have some fundamental flaws in it. It needs to go through its own reformation. It has problems. But it has been protected and it has been seized upon by progressives. Okay? And this means right and left. It doesn't matter. Whoever is against individualism, whoever is against, who is pro-collective and pro-government centralized power, that's your progressives right there, and there's a long history of it. This book has gotten amazing reviews, and I've heard a lot through it. I've read excerpts. That's what got my interest piqued. I think that for the rest of the show, I want to read this. I don't know. I think I want to read it. What's going on, Joseph Patrick, in the chat room? I know Joseph. I know Joseph on Twitter. Good guy. Really good account to follow on Twitter. Joseph, be sure to put your in fact, everybody should link up with each other on Twitter. Put all your tags in there and everybody follow each other. That'd be great. But Joe, thank you for joining us tonight, man. The first 38 minutes we covered some topics, and now I'm just getting into a mood here. Because I was just about to say to all of my Muslim friends out there, I have a few. Not many, I have a few. I don't think they watch this show, but if anybody does watch this show who is Muslim and you've been able to listen to the conversations and be able to extract what's really being said and separate it from the overbearing thought and the overbearing urge to label everything Islamophobic and phobic and ist and ism and all of this shit. It's being used just like immigration. The way that immigration is being pushed in this country, in a way, it's being used in a way that exploits people's compassion, real human compassion that we all have. And it takes you, and it makes you feel compassionate for people. And it's ushered in with this policy that is just nation-killing. Nation-killing. Okay? For the benefit of people that people in the streets are usually protesting against, the 1%, the unseen hands that actually go and control how everything in the world works. These are the ones who usher in these terrible ideas through the guise of global warming and saving the planet, through immigration and saving the children, through the refugee crises in Europe, in the Middle East. These are the people who are making the problems and impose the solutions. And then when their solutions are found to be bad, The only way that they push back against people, and in a very convincing way, obviously, is to say that those who dissent are racist. Those who dissent are bigoted in some kind of a way, prejudiced in some kind of a way. Don't allow people to take away your criticism. Criticism. Islam deserves to be critiqued and criticized when it is not becoming of what everybody says should be 21st century progressive ways of life. It's definitely not a progressive religion, and it's got a lot of problems, lots of flaws. For all of the good that it does in people's lives, for all of the beauty that people put out there, it's got lots of that, lots of problems. So, reading this now, I wanted to put this ahead. Now, it's up to you guys if you guys want to. If you guys want to call in, the Skype is on. It's Quite Frankly Podcast. If you want to call in, say whatever the hell you want. But I'm just going to start reading this because it talks about what this is all really fear. It all comes down to fear. And what are we really fearful of? Okay? So it starts off with this allegory. In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. Now, I don't know how to pronounce what's about to happen, so here we go. Listen to this. In 2001, an archaeological team in the Jarab Desert discovered the remains of what they describe as mankind's oldest living ancestor. Okay, an ape-like mammal with prominent brows. More chimpanzee than human, these primates lived in groups in a lakeside forest that gave way 7 million years ago to the Saharan desert sands of North Africa. During the excavation, the team also encountered the remains of large saber-toothed cat size of a lion, which hunted these early humans as prey. The cat's 6-inch front sabers were perfectly suited for carving through flesh and bone, and their low-slung frames were adapted for stealthily stalking their next meals. Nothing could outrun these powerful creatures, certainly not the primates of North Africa that lived in constant fear of them. With our present data, we don't know what precisely the interactions between the primate and a big carnivore said Patrick Vinaud, director of University of Poitiers, Institute of Paleontology, and Human Paleontology, more so. But probably these interactions were not so friendly. So now that he goes on to talk about, creates this fictional scenario where you had this primate type of guy, this chimpanzee type of guy, and his family and whatever kind of settlement they had. And of course, here comes this saber-toothed tiger type of stalker that comes in and attacks the male. And through some kind of stroke of fate, one blow to the side of the head of this cat, this giant saber-toothed tiger cat thing, makes it run off scurrying away, leaving the guy injured and all that stuff and bloodied and bruised, but still lives to fight another day. And he asks at the end, what does any of this have to do with Woodrow Wilson or Hillary Clinton? And for all of you out there that think this is just one big Democrat bashing thing, he has Teddy Roosevelt in there, and also Donald Trump. Teddy Roosevelt was actually ushered in the progressive movement. He was progressive before Woodrow Wilson was. Okay, so there's a lot in here, and it's all encompassing. I can't wait to get through to it, just to see how it is, how it plays out. But here we go. It's a good question. And it's what we're going to explore in this book. Well, fear, as well as hope, as well as the hopeful solutions offered to combat it, is ultimately what makes progressivism so successful. So there you go, fear and the hopeful solutions. It's what makes otherwise intelligent, rational, and good human beings succumb to so easily to obviously absurd visions of the future painted by politicians. It's why our brothers and sisters and our children, and sometimes even you and I, are continually tempted by the progressive siren song. Many experts have written about progressivism. I've talked to you about it on air for more than a decade now, so I'm guessing you are already familiar with its frightening and demonstrable outcomes. The insatiable thirst for control and betterment of others. The determination to build a massive, all-controlling welfare state that holds the rest of us hostage to its preferences and whims. And the flirtation with totalitarianism masked by the guise of political correctness. Progressives regularly espouse ideas and support causes that openly involves the subjugation, murder, or mutilation of their fellow human beings, and always in the name of better, of a better world for all. Okay? Now, what it comes around to, and what I thought was really interesting, I won't go into it because obviously there's about five or six more pages just to the prologue itself, but what it comes down to is fear of what? Well, it's always fear of death. And it also brought up all of the things that we were reading in that Carlos Castaneda book that Rob Corrado gave me to borrow. A lot of it has to do with our outlook on the warrior's outlook on life and impending death, and being able to constantly remind yourself that you are already dead, what is already lost, and what is coming, and what you need to reckon with, and that all of our actions, our hopeful actions, where we're constantly battling, calls it the warrior's folly. What he called it? The folly? I forget what it is. But all these actions of hope, they're there to try to take our minds off of what we know is coming, so that we can get down to what we have to do right now, or what we want to do right now. And what that is it's the constant trying to overcome what we are as animals, and how we're the only animals on earth that A, have the insatiable desire to live, but also have the understanding and the knowing that we will not. The only animal on earth that has to deal with it every day. And those who ignore it, I guess they're the happier ones. But there's something else here. There's something to that that you see play out in government and in society. People's fear. What people want to do to create a society. What is it? I feel like, and it all has to do with people's next meal and all. It's like, well, if we're going to be alive, why not have it be great while we're here? It's not great, though. When you look at what it costs, If we're all going to, just for the sake of argument, say that, okay, well, you know what? Life is short. Life is short no matter how you cut it up. The average human lifespan, even if we live to be 80, 90 years old, what is 80 to 90 years in the span of human history? Nothing. It is nothing. It's like the amount of time that a bubble that you blow drifts around the local park and then pops. Or nothing. Shadows and dust. And in that time there, to have us be shackled, and our minds shackled, and our efforts shackled, so that somebody else can benefit off of their own, off of the some kind of a world vision that they've concocted, or of a group that they belong to is concocted. That is some damn scary shit, and it doesn't lead anywhere. We need to start looking at the finite nature of our lives, the finite nature of all of this, and really contemplate what freedom really brings to the table. Real freedom. Not free stuff. Freedom. It's just a passing of the baton. You talk about elitism. You talk about monarchies. You talk about this stuff. It's just, the world has been imprisoned in some way or another, and we always creep toward those cycles of imprisonment, and then we back away. I was talking about it before. I feel like we're like WWE wrestlers, most of us, as a society, especially here in the U.S., you may not like the outcome of the 2016 election, but I tell you right now, the 2016 election was that wrestler on his back getting pinned by The Undertaker in the center of the ring. And Mills Lane is about to do the three count. And right before the three count comes down, we as a country just heaved our backs, our shoulders off of the mat and gave ourselves a second bit of life. We were still unconscious, beaten and bruised and on the ground. But for Christ's sake, something inside of us heaved it off. That's just what it is. It's just what it is. It doesn't say anything about Donald Trump as a candidate or a person. It just has something to say about us as a people and where we were going and what it meant. It was the only choice. It was the only choice. Now, where it goes, I don't know. I don't know. As we said the day that we came on the air after the election, the first day after the election, we've gotten a chance at a chance. And that is it. No guarantees. There was never going to be a fix there. There's nothing that you can put your mind to that you can invest all your eggs in one basket. I wouldn't. But the fear, that is all this is, man. It's just fear. Brian O'Connor says, I figure Trump will just reverse it. He'll create something more stringent. Obama took away a reason not to make more restrictive entry of Arab Muslims. Dan Spratlin says, 2016 election was WrestleMania. Marianne Hart joins us late. What's going on, Marianne? What's going on, Johnny Charles? What's going on, everybody? It's good to have you guys here. Brian O'Connor says, I despise Glenn Beck. Listen, for a long time, I couldn't stand him either. But then I got SiriusXM, and I stumbled onto the show, and I gave it a chance. And like I said, I like Pat and Stu, and Glenn gets, you know, he gets his point across sometimes, but I don't know. He's too much of a media ballerina for me. I'd like to meet him one day. I'd like to have him try. That'd be a trip to have him call into the show. But I'm all for reading a book. I'm all for reading a book. I like reading books. And I think we all should read books that challenge us. This is a type of book that 2 years ago I wouldn't be caught dead buying or walking out or checking out at a library. Not in the least. But I'm willing to read anything right now. So, I don't know. I don't know. Hey, listen, I've got 7 more minutes until I am off the air. I think, Mike, we got an 8 o'clock on? 7 more minutes until we're off the air. So if you want to call in for the last couple of minutes, you do it. Tonight's show was a little odd, you might say. It was a little change of pace. There was a little bit less music. There was a little bit more talking. I was a little bit more upset. Absolutely. Absolutely. And hopefully I get it all out of me for tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. It's the 23rd. The day before Christmas Eve, and I think that we should have a really nice show. It's going to be broadcast on Facebook Live tomorrow night, unless something happens. Just look out for whatever. But so in ahead of time, just go to Facebook and like the fan page, the Quite Frankly fan page, and that's where we're going to be going live, and that will be syndicated across the very, very large Capstone Broadcasting Network, which is a large 9 million-plus like network of pro-cannabis pages and entertainment pages and all that. That's why all the talking, the topics of conversation on Friday night are usually a little bit more smoky and a little bit more fun. In fact, maybe I'll just save this for tomorrow. Robot babies. Robot babies and robot sex. Again, sex and marriage with robots. Science fiction or a new reality? That's by fizz.org. Okay, so now we're not only talking about fucking robots, we're talking about marrying them as well. So that's starting to be talked about. Also, from Bloomberg Businessweek, babies, robot babies that are meant to scare kids out of scare teens out of having kids might not be working. So there you go. We're going to do robot stuff tomorrow night. What else can we do tomorrow night? We did Adam Soleil tonight, how he's just a fucking... He's just an ethnic antagonist. That's all he is. Saddam Hussein's daughter, Trump has political sensibilities, she says. And she also said that she has not watched the execution video of her father. She's about to call him her husband. Barack Obama bans oil and gas drilling in most of the Arctic and Atlantic oceans. Maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit. But what else do we have here? Campaign hallucinations are lifting. This is from Scott Adams. Yeah, robot sex news tomorrow. Don't worry about it. Campaign hallucinations are lifting. Here's the last thing we'll do tonight. This is by Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert. About half of the citizens of the United States think they elected a president who will, quote, drain the swamp in Washington, D.C. and negotiate good trade deals for the public. But the other half believes they are living in the 1930s Germany and the next Hitler just came to office. Those are very different movies. Yet we all sit in the same theater at the same time. It's real trippy. As I often say, the human brain didn't evolve to give us a clear understanding of our reality because we don't need it to survive as a species. All we need to do is survive long enough to procreate. As long as we can still make babies, it doesn't matter that we are all experiencing different movies. You can be living in the 1930s Germany in your movie, and I can be living in 2016 trying to make America great again. Yet the population of humans is still growing, so living in different movies doesn't matter as much as you'd think. This is my kind of article. Immediately after the election was decided, protests against Trump popped up in several cities. Protesting makes perfect sense if you think Hitler just came to power in your country. You must stop Hitler. But the days went by and protests fizzled out. Huh? If you really believe Hitler came to power in the United States, why would you stop protesting? What are you doing that is more important than stopping Hitler? Absolutely. So why did the protests fizzle out? And I find the question fascinating. So should you. Here are some explanations I can imagine. Number one, protesters decided that accepting Hitler as their leader was better than missing classes or skipping work. Or, number two, protesters have now seen enough counter evidence to diminish their hallucination of living in 1930s Germany. I think the better explanation is the second one. Look at how much counter-evidence is actually accumulating. Number one, anti-Trump Republicans are making peace and supporting Trump. Would they do that if they thought he was Hitler? Number two, foreign leaders show every sign of being willing and able to work with Trump. Wouldn't they be yelling Hitler if they thought that he was one? Number three, Trump continues to disavow white nationalists when asked. Would Hitler do that? Number four, Trump has moderated his more extreme views on immigration, waterboarding, and trying to jail Clinton. That doesn't sound very Hitlerish. Number five, Trump's public demeanor has transformed from campaign mode to governing mode. He looks more serious now. Number six, a year ago it would have seemed ridiculous for a president to be tweeting provocative things several times a day, but now it looks almost normal. We even see the benefit of it because the media is a filter as much of a source of information. Number seven, last couple things we're going to do here. Trump keeps meeting with people that opposed him, and both sides seem pleased with those meetings. That isn't very Hitlerish. I really implore all of you guys to see what Ray Lewis's meeting with Jim Brown and Donald Trump was like. Go check out YouTube, Ray Lewis meeting with Jim Brown, and check that out. It's an 8-minute video. It's really good. We'll get to the rest of this later. But aside from that, thank you guys. Thank you guys so much for hanging out tonight. I can't wait for tomorrow night. It'll be a Christmas break. I'm thinking about taking Monday the 26th off as well because I just feel burnt. But I don't know. We'll figure it out. Figure it out. I'm only one person. And even though Gadget Doc sends me all the links in the world and he tries to help me out as much as he can, I'm only one person, and this really only boils down to one person, I'll tell you that much. I'll talk to you guys soon. Have a great night, be well, and enjoy your nights. Lord knows I will.